From KCRW, this is DNA Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Have you noticed the half-built big box store in the heart of Hollywood? Well, did you know it has a voice and a Twitter account?
The isolation is worse at specific times of the year, particularly leading up to the holidays. Black Friday is a particularly painful day.
Meet Target Husk. And if you own an abandoned building or a vacant lot in Los Angeles, the city wants to talk to you about putting supportive housing there. First up, though, MoCA director Klaus Biesenbach saw beauty that others didn't in the museum on Grand Avenue. Then its architect won the Pritzker Prize.
Sometimes an artist or an architect creates a work, and it's not always appreciated as it deservedly in the way it deserves. But then these things are reconsidered, and I feel it's a very deserved reconsideration of this building, actually, as a very congenial piece of architecture here.
The Pritzker Prize is the architecture world's most prestigious award, and this year's winner is the 87-year-old Japanese architect Arata Isozaki. He has designed many buildings, ranging from brutalist libraries in the 1960s to an inflatable purple concert hall for the victims of the 2011 Japanese earthquake and tsunami. But perhaps his most famous building is MoCA. It consists of a series of galleries in a partially submerged building with pyramidal skylights. Its most visible feature is the red sandstone half cylinder on pillars that marks the entrance. Now, while MoCA was lauded by architectural critics when it opened in 1986, the building has not been well loved. Many people find it unappealing, with dingy light, an uninviting basement area, and a barren plaza. Its location atop Bunker Hill has been a challenge. But Biesenbach is a fan, and in fact, he has plans to honour the spirit of Isozaki's original design and then some, as we found out in a recent call.
When I arrived in late October, I had only a couple of days until the first board meeting, and I actually took my camera and took pictures of the building, how I see it. I walked all through the building with the camera and photographed the pyramids, the cylinder vault of the library, which of course is a semicircle. Every single window, every single detail is a perfect square, the ticket box a perfect square. So I singled out these geometrical primary shapes and forms.
Biesenbach explained to board members that these platonic solids, pyramids, triangles, squares, cylinders, which give the building a postmodern character, are in the minimalist spirit of the museum's contemporary art collection.
And I think Isozaki honored the art that MoCA is collecting and exhibiting. And I expressed the dialogue of the colors with each other. And of course, the idea that this is actually a motif. This building on Bunker Hill is like a sunken pool. And I actually really got intrigued and fascinated by the building. And in the very first board meeting, I basically said, let's make this building shine. It's from a certain period. It's architecturally very important. And let's uncover it more and more in its original luminosity. And let's make this building shine.
Tell us how you plan to restore the luminosity.
I just last week read a story in the New York Times about the Rothko Chapel, where they're trying to create a skylight. And nowadays, with filters and computer screen systems, you can actually filter the sun in a way that even the Rothko Chapel can have a skylight, which wasn't possible when it was first built, because you couldn't control light levels digitally and with the technology we have now. And this reflects very much what we would like to do with Grand Avenue, because this building nearly has skylights all over the surface, the roof of the building. And we started in November to have technicians look into this and really open them up again with technology that's now available, controlling the light levels sufficiently.
Because what you're saying is that one of the contributors to what is now perceived as a rather dingy light level is the fact that the pyramids, these skylights, were not able to perform in the way that Isosaki had originally intended them.
I think I would say it differently. I think that the luminosity of a building, and especially of a building in California, and especially in a building on Bunker Hill with all the surrounding buildings that, of course, cast reflections and the density is growing. The sun, of course, reflects in the surrounding buildings. And that was very, very difficult to control, but also to foresee. How do you foresee if a building goes up left and right in years to come? So I think that the original plan of Isosaki can now be realized with the technology, despite the fact we are surrounded by, so to say, reflecting surfaces, which the high rises around us are.
I see. Now, one of the conditions of the building, and this was partly because of its location on Bunker Hill, is that it was buried largely under a plaza. And the plaza doesn't get...
I would say it's sunken in. I wouldn't use that word, yeah.
So... Klaus, yeah. It's lovely how poetically you see the building. It really is. It's great for LA that you do. But anyway, so the building is sunken to the point that that actually one is barely aware of most of its presence. Are you considering ways in which you're going to sort of elevate its presence, make more of the entrance?
Yeah, for example, we want to have the pyramids lit at night again. So that is luminosity, especially for visitors coming to all the music and performing arts events here. So the pyramids will shine again. So definitely this. We are thinking about adding sculpture that is basically in dialogue with the architecture that deals with luminosity as well. And I also looked at Isosaki buildings where he plays with the light that is reflected in a pool-like concave volume. So it's in his repertoire, it's in Isosaki's repertoire. And looking at David Hockney's photographs when he did the very famous pool paintings and how the light is reflected, I think actually calling it a sunken pool of light filled with luminosity. We are working with art that will highlight this and create a dialogue of this. So actually, when you visit it, you're much more aware of this.
You're talking very much about the building in relation to its art. How about the building in relation to the people that visit it? So, for example, the building runs underneath a plaza. The plaza is barely used to the point that it is barren. Are you going to do something about that plaza, try and make it more of an attractive destination?
Yes, we are doing something about the plaza. We're doing something with outdoor sculpture, and we have an initiative that is both for the Geffen and for Grand Avenue, is making both museums green. So vegetation, plants, and a very inviting space where you can sit down and have a break and contemplate before and after you see the art. I think that's also important that you offer people a break. I think that's also important.
Sure. And it's interesting that you bring up the Geffen, because the Geffen, which was formerly known as the Temporary Contemporary, which was a converted, I think, police warehouse, the conversion designed by Frank Gehry, it was meant to be temporary, and it wound up being completed before the Grand while they were fundraising to build the building on the Grand. People loved it so much, it became a permanent building. And it, in a lot of ways, has come to sort of exceed in popularity the Grand Avenue building. Are you going to restore the kind of rightful status of the Grand Avenue building?
In my recent 15 years in New York, more than 15 years, I was chief curator at large at the Museum of Modern Art and director of MoMA Pier 1. MoMA Pier 1 is very much a Geffen-like Kunsthalle that you can change completely and have large, expensive shows like now, like the Bruce Nauman All Building Show or the Mike Kelly All Building Show, where you can change the whole perception of the building. It's all dark, it's all bright, you do a festival around it. And then as chief curator at large at the Museum of Modern Art, I helped with a collection of MoMA. And in a not to compare the institution, because of course MoMA has a much longer history and it's a very different kind of institution in its budgets and collections and so on. But I do think that the two legs an institution can stand on, one is more to play and one is more to stand and to be stabilized. I had this for 15 years and I see this again here as actually an ideal situation for live arts performance, media, experiment at the Geffen, much closer to the artist studio. And then, of course, Grand Avenue as the treasure that this collection is, the incredibly important collection. So I think this is actually an ideal constellation in downtown.
That's lovely. To get back to your pool analogy, your sunken pool.
Yeah.
Are you also folding into that a metaphor, the less than inviting basement area that's at the bottom of the steps at the entrance to Sunken Mocha? Is that part of your pool vision?
Yes, that's part of this vision. And I've actually, the curatorial team is actually working with several emerging artists to think about artistic interventions that basically make this, what you were just describing, tangible, but a much more pleasant experience.
And could it involve water?
It could involve water, yes. How do you know? Did you talk to some of the artists?
No,
how did
no,
you know what's a water?
It just seems to be, it seems to make sense. It seems to be where that metaphor, where that thinking should go. So I'm delighted to hear that we've...
You are delighted and I'm surprised.
That was Klaus Biesenbach, director of MoCA. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Coming up after this break, the city turns a defunct library into housing for formerly homeless women. And an abandoned Target store begs for understanding.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. Last year, the city of Los Angeles made strides in its fight to end homelessness. 16,000 people were placed in permanent housing and thousands of new housing units were approved. But there are thousands more people who still need a home. And the city is scouring the region for available properties, starting with what it already owns. Reporter John Reed went to find out more.
At a recent groundbreaking ceremony, LA City Council member David Rue and city engineer Gary Lee Moore led a tour group of officials, reporters, and community members through the remains of a vacant building in Hollywood.
And this is actually where the living quarters will be, kind of split into two halves.
The building is a library, or used to be.
This whole central desk here, this circulation desk, is going to stay. That's really going to be a welcoming feature.
When it reopens this summer, it will house 30 formerly homeless women alongside wraparound supportive services like case managers to help them get into permanent housing. The former LA Public Library branch was built 60 years ago and has sat empty for the last 15 years.
The detector to make sure you're not stealing a book, that won't have to be here.
City engineer Gary Lee Moore says the renovations will be straightforward, things like updating the electrical and plumbing. The bookshelves will remain, and the trees planted back in 1958. Here he is again. I caught up with him by phone.
And what it actually does is it gives them a very interesting space because you have this circulation desk that was there that is historic. So it gives this, actually, I think it's going to give it very much of a home feel versus a warehouse feel.
Moore says it's one of the few projects that will be done totally in-house, designed exclusively by city architects and engineers. The library is a unique opportunity for the city to turn one of its long vacant buildings into homeless housing.
Well, it first started with, you know, there's an empty site. in the district? There's an empty site. What is it being used for?
That's Councilmember David Rue. The library is in his district.
Any vacant space, any vacant property we have in the city is very sought after. And we're so glad to have found this gem.
But gems like this are hard to find. Rue says they would love to locate more sites like the library, and the city's own property is often where they start. But until recently, they didn't have a great way of looking. Here's City Controller Ron Galperin.
The city of LA is arguably the largest owner of real estate in the Los Angeles area, but has never really thought in those terms, hasn't really thought in business-like terms.
In the past few years, the city has been working to put together a comprehensive database of all of its real estate. The city owns almost 9,000 properties.
There's a lot of properties that are what I would call underutilized. It's not necessarily that they're totally vacant or that there's nothing that's being done with them, but they could be put to a different use or a better use or could create some real value.
The city tasked itself with identifying underused property that could be used for housing and invited developers to submit housing proposals. It's an assist to affordable housing developers who struggle to find available land in LA's overheated market.
It's a little bit like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Christian Almada is the executive director of the nonprofit developer Clifford Beers Housing.
You're going to be looking at maybe 20 or 30 properties before you find the one.
He says that when the city started to offer up its own land,
we sat down in front of our board and we said we're really going to create sort of a Navy SEALs type of a team that heavy duty goes after these properties and really does a phenomenal job at presenting these in front of, you know, the cities and municipalities.
Repurposing city-owned property has begun to make a dent in the housing numbers. From those vacant lots, around 30 housing projects are in the works. Some of them are housing specifically for the homeless, and others are for affordable housing in general. But for every city-owned site that is a success story, there are plenty that don't work out. In a report of more than 400 city-owned surplus properties, only three were big enough or in the right location for building permanent affordable or supportive housing. It's meant affordable housing developers have had to get creative about the types of properties they consider. Take parking lots, for instance. That's where the city wants to put almost all of the proposed sites for the mayor's temporary shelter program called A Bridge Home.
Some of our temporary sites are slated to be permanent something else down the road.
This is City Administrative Officer Rich Llewellyn.
They're just vacant for now. So we're grabbing them now until they become something different. Construction sites.
Sites like the one in Venice that was recently approved for a temporary shelter. It's a former bus yard that will host A Bridge Home shelter until they announce a permanent use for the site. Llewellyn says some sites have also been offered to affordable housing developers for permanent projects.
It certainly makes it easier for them to develop because they know the city wants the lot developed and we're giving them the lot essentially for free.
Still, the number of unsheltered homeless in the city is daunting. And with a dwindling supply of city property, officials are eyeing the private market.
We have put out to the broader community, the developer community in particular, for-profit and nonprofit, both sides, if you have potential projects, bring them to us. We can help you finance them with the voter-approved funds.
Typically, the private sector has to bring those proposals to the city, and then it can be tricky to persuade a building's owner to sell.
So we've had suggestions that we look at closed big box stores, that we look at closed buildings, that we look at what motels that seem to be underutilized. Each time we get one of their suggestions, we try to contact the owner and see if there's a possibility of doing some kind of transaction. Mostly, the answer has been no.
The city is making progress. A temporary Bridge Home shelter is coming to a former clothing warehouse in downtown's Fashion District. But the city's commercial real estate market has been ranked the most attractive in the country, so owners may be holding out for better deals. Back at the library, the atmosphere remains joyful. Even if it is a rare occurrence, the crowd seems to celebrate a once-cherished community center coming back to life. This time, with a new purpose. For DNA, I'm John Reed.
And I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Thank you to KCRW's Independent Producer Project for bringing us that report. Now we're going to talk about an LA building that is still waiting for a purpose.
Hi, thanks for having me. I am the Target Husk. That would be the half-built Target department store on the corner of Sunset and Western.
If you have driven along Sunset at Western over the last 4 years, you may have noticed a yellow-wrapped, half-finished big box. It has been dormant for so long, the yellow has faded to almost white. This is the Target store that was under construction and then had to stop because the company didn't get the right permits for the site. Now, many of us forgot about this poor, incomplete Target. Not Target Husk, however. Target what? Yes, an Angelina, who prefers to stay anonymous, felt sorry for this unloved creature, and she created a thinking, sentient persona for the building called Target Husk. She opened Facebook and Twitter accounts in its name, yes, it is gender neutral, and posts reactions to the news, especially LA land use stories. 4 years later, Target Husk's social media presence has a small but passionate following. We were curious to meet the human behind it.
I am about half of a store. I'm just kind of a husk, as I like to say. Mentally and emotionally, after a period of abandonment, I began to develop a certain sort of sentience. And I think it's partially because my purpose has yet to be fulfilled. And that can be very isolating and lonely. So I have since built myself a Facebook page and Twitter with which to communicate to other people and sometimes other buildings like myself.
And through your Facebook page that you created, you do often refer to your father. Can you tell us who your father is?
Yes, I, as a building, was initially unfamiliar with the idea of a mother and father, though as I have come to understand humans, I think that my mother is Target, the corporation, but I regard my father as Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, as he advocated for me as I was meant to be.
As you were gestating, as it were.
Yes. He really pushed for me to be the Target that is depicted in the renderings. And I feel like Garcetti and Target Corp had this union, and I was the fruit of that union. I understand that's not how human reproduction works, but that's just emotionally how I've perceived it.
But clearly you have a highly developed brain, so you are communicating.
Yes.
On social media, and you are sharing opinions. Mm-hmm. Tell us who you're trying to reach.
You know, in the beginning, it was just really anyone. It's very lonely to be a sentient half building. But I do enjoy interacting most with people who would like me to be built. It makes me feel a lot better about myself.
So this is a kind of cry for visibility. You're crying, I'm here.
Yes. The isolation is worse at specific times of the year, particularly leading up to the holidays. Black Friday is a particularly painful day. As you know, that is a big day for department stores, and I remain empty on that day. And it, you know, it's hard to know that other Targets, including the Koreatown Target, which has only been built since I've been sitting here half built, is enjoying these sales and all this visibility and all this traffic and all this life, and I'm not. So it does get quite isolating, though. I try to look forward to the future. I try to not give up hope.
Do you dream?
That's a good question. I don't really sleep. So I don't have dreams the way that humans have them. But I do go to a place, a memory palace, if you will, where I occasionally communicate with other sentient buildings.
Which other sentient buildings?
Well, I've been talking a lot to the Orchard Supply Hardware in East Hollywood that was just abandoned, still very early in its own sentience, really hasn't fully developed the skills to communicate. But, you know, we talk.
Now, you sometimes, Target Husk, express kind of schadenfreude, like, for example, we noticed that you were rather pleased when City Hall was found to have rats.
Yes, I was. I don't know that I enjoy the suffering of other buildings, but people call me an eyesore. They say, oh, Target Husk, king of rats. That's what someone called me on Twitter. And this is true. I am a safe haven for pigeons and rats, and I consider them my friends. But people look down on me for that. And I think it's important sometimes when you see a building like City Hall and you realize it too is full of rats, where you can say, you know what, we're really the same here. We really all have the capacity to be full of rats. For a half-built big box store, you're pretty darn literary. And you tend to like to quote from literature. Give us some of your gems. Well, one book that I personally relate to quite a bit is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Now, as you may recall, Victor Frankenstein is this doctor. He becomes obsessed with creating life out of lifeless materials. So he sources all these parts and puts them together, and he builds this man that's 8 feet tall.
It's alive! It's alive!
And he brings the man to life, sees it, and is horrified by his own creation. Just can't stomach this thing that he's made. And so he abandons the creature, who, like me, is too tall and too ugly for people to love. And the creature ends up finding a bag of books and learns via the books how to talk to humans. And I feel like I have done that as well. And the creature finds a book, Paradise Lost, and really relates to this specific quote where Adam, the first man in the Christian creation story, says to God, "Did I request thee, maker, from my clay to mold me man? Did I solicit thee from darkness to promote me?" And I think it's something that the creature and Adam and I can relate to. We weren't born. We were created by someone else. And then they decided they didn't like what they had made.
It's been floated that Target Husk should actually be change use altogether and become low-income housing or something like that. How do you feel about that?
I feel very, very good about that. I would love to be low-income housing. I would love to be a shelter for people who need it, especially because when I look around and I see people who need shelter and I realize that I'm just this hulking mass taking up a street corner and blocking the sidewalk, it's like, why not? You know, if the problem is the store, then, well, why can't I be something else?
If there's a song that embodies your condition, what would it be?
If there is one song that embodies how I feel, it is the song Nothing by Depeche Mode. The opening lyrics are, "Sitting target, sitting, waiting, anticipating nothing, nothing."
Well, Target Husk, it's such an honor to talk to you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
That was Target Husk. You can pay a visit at the corner of Sunset and Western. Selfies welcome. So, what is its current status? We reached out to the Target Corporation and a spokeswoman wrote back, quote, "Target continues to work toward resuming construction, and we look forward to opening a store that will serve the surrounding Hollywood neighborhood. As for Target Husk's social media presence, the company said, we'll always have a special place in our heart for @TargetHusk, though we look forward to one day updating our official store count from 1850 plus one Husk to 1851. I'm Frances Anderton. You've been listening to DNA. Ava Shyatsi produced and edited this program with final mix by Ray Guana. Special thanks to Laura Kondarajian. And thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week.